This episode is sponsored by the Great Courses Plus Video Learning Service, which gives you unlimited access to a huge library of the Great Courses Lecture Series. There are so many to choose from in topics such as science, history, cooking, and more. For a limited time, the Great Courses Plus is giving PotioBooks.com listeners an incredible opportunity to watch one of their popular courses, The Fundamentals of Photography, absolutely free. The Fundamentals of Photography is filmed in partnership with National Geographic and is taught by professional photographer Joel Sartori. It's a great way to learn how to take stunning photographs like a pro, helping to capture memories of what you see and experience. Just for a limited time, The Great Courses Plus is offering PotioBooks.com listeners a chance to stream The Fundamentals of Photography, a $235 value, and hundreds of other courses for free. You can stream this course and all others from any internet-connected TV, PC, or through the Great Courses Plus mobile apps for iOS and Android devices. But this free offer is only available for a limited time, so hurry. To stream The Fundamentals of Photography from The Great Courses Plus for free, you must go to thegreatcoursesplus.com/podio. That's thegreatcoursesplus.com/podio to start streaming absolutely free. Do it today.
You are listening to Captain Blackwell's Prize, written by V. E. Ulett, Episode 3, Chapter 4. The men at the helm had to be relieved every half-glass from the tremendous physical labor of keeping the ship on her course before the shrieking wind, with a gigantic sea following, and a bare scrap of canvas forward, which Captain Blackwell couldn't keep from anxiously regarding. He'd been lashed to a stanchion on his quarterdeck since the end of the second dog watch, and at present, past 1 o'clock in the morning, he was weary and wet through to the skin. The officers and men on deck were also sodden figures, and nearly all his officers were on deck, even Mr. Sprague. In the Atlantic off the coasts of Spain and France, Captain Blackwell remembered gales lasting 3 days and more, yet this was a sea such as he had never experienced in over 20 years of naval service. A sea with the white foam boiling over great expanses of it and blown in dense ribbons at their stern. They were going to find out whether his preparations were sufficient or lacking. If they were found wanting, the toil with the treasure would be for naught, and he'd chosen the removal of gold from La Trinidad over making all fast for this storm, and cost them their lives. In the midst of these miserable reflections, Captain Blackwell's exhausted mind turned to his brother and the young woman below. He cast himself off from his lashings, bellowing to the officer of the watch he meant to go below while he might. Conditions were worsening, with the waves crashing down with shocking force. He staggered into his cabin after pulling himself with tremendous effort down the companion ladder. Mercedes appeared, wrenching her cabin door open after hearing him enter. He stood just outside her door, water forming in a puddle around him. "Shall I fetch you a dry shirt, sir?" "Where's McMurtry?" "Lashed to his cot, sir," Mercedes said. "He had an accident with the spirit stove, burned one arm quite severely, and received a blow to the head." Captain Blackwell looked at her in astonishment, which increased when she presented him with a jar of coffee and a biscuit. "The coffee is cold, sir. Its making was the cause of your steward's misfortune." "And how do you keep, ma'am?" He could see how she did. Remarkably well, under the circumstances. Neither sick nor hysterical. Offering him a dry shirt and refreshment. She handed him a towel, so he could wipe his face dry. He forestalled her reply. "How is it one of my prime hands is so knocked about, yet you're not even the least seasick?" I was sick, Captain, but got it over before you came down. And as to the other, I cannot say. She bowed her head. If anything, she looked grieved, apprehensive. Captain Blackwell didn't wonder she should feel so, alone at sea with 240 men. Perhaps it's because I was born on a ship, Mercedes said.
No, no, leave it. It's no use at all.
Captain Blackwell reached out and grasped Mercedes' arm as she tried to pass him on her way to his cabin for dry linen. She'd apparently determined to do her part while McMurtry was on the sick list. The ship was descending the crest of the next enormous wave, and Mercedes was flung against Captain Blackwell. He looked down at the top of her head and smelt the flowery scent of her hair. How did she manage such a thing in a ship? The passing thought unexpectedly made his heart ache for the possibility he might never live to know.
Put on your warmest clothes now, miss. I shall wait and lash you into your cot.
He turned his head, and when he turned back to her, Mercedes was braced in her cot in a midshipman's jacket and breeches, with a cloak over all. An oath escaped him, and he tried not to gape at her while he made her fast in her cot with 7 neat turns. And though he took no more than a few moments to do so, he still wet her liberally from his own dripping person.
You shall be able to get free, miss, but won't wear yourself out so in keeping in.
God preserve us then, Captain.
Amen, said Captain Blackwell, leaving the cabin.
He made his way forward to descend to the gunroom, but met Narhilla coming aft. By mutual accord, they halted next to the gun named Sudden Death.
Begging your pardon, sir, Narhilla brought his hand to his forehead. I just come from your honor's brother. He gave up his good salt horse and Madeira wine took with supper. But other than that, sir, he's brave.
Lashed him to his cot, sir.
Thank you, Narhilla. Did you hear McMurtry took a tumble?
Aye, sir. Carried him to the sick berth myself.
He'll not soon be allowed to forget it, sir. Oh, no.
Cracking his pate while that little miss sits there cool as a ship's cat.
Oh. Beg pardon, sir.
But neither could Captain Blackwell help the grin rising to his countenance at the scene Narhilla described, as he and his coxswain battled their way back onto the deck. When they gained it, the momentary human glow of happiness was completely wiped from Captain Blackwell's mind by the spectacle nature presented him. Over there astern was a wave stretching away to the horizon, a wave like a straight wall of water, neither curving nor with a crest, but having a singular line of white foam running its length. He was strapped once more to his stanchion on the quarterdeck when the shock of that wave hit in Constant, exploding on her deck, pressing her down. But the ship righted, the water streaming from her scuppers, and she ran up the next sea with sickening speed. Captain Blackwell had no choice but to continue to run down sea, with blocks and spars, even the ship's cutter and jolly boat plucked from Inconstant and whirled away out of sight.
Santissima Madre de Dios!
Captain Blackwell heard the utterance and turned to see Mr. Martinez, one of 3 men, at the wheel, just before there was a splitting, tearing noise distinct from the shrieking wind and the crashing sea, and the foremast came down upon the deck and canted half over the side. Captain Blackwell cast off his lashings, roaring, "Axes! Axes!" and ran forward, leading a party to clear the wreckage and try to get another sail on her, before she broached to and was pooped by the next enormous wave. Below, in her sleeping cabin, Mercedes endured the racing climb and violent descents as the ship struggled in the storm. She couldn't imagine how it was for Captain Blackwell and the men on deck, but she heard Captain Blackwell's heavy tread and shouted orders.
some of which were intelligible to her, and some reaching her only just perceptible as human speech. And she felt the tremendous concussion when the foremast went by the boards. Mercedes was lying on the port bulkhead, the ship heeling well over. She was kept from flying about the cabin by the ropes, bruising her. The ship lay over and groaned, and Mercedes couldn't keep the image from her mind of the masts underwater. Then Inconstant's head came up into the wind. Even with the roar of the wind and sea, Mercedes heard the men forward cheering. They were once more running before the gale. Dawn brought a second crisis. Mercedes must have slept, despite the shocking high sea, for she came awake to a cry of, "Breakers! Breakers there! Helm hard a larboard! All hands to ware ship!" It was Captain Blackwell's voice, a desperate and violent croak. She heard the shrilling of the bosun's pipe, followed by the drum beat calling the men to their stations and the sound of near 200 men racing about the ship. Mercedes slipped under the ropes Captain Blackwell had made fast the evening before and out the end of the cot. She hadn't been told her station. She supposed it must be in the cockpit, as it had been in La Trinidad. Just outside the cabin, she met Mr. Martinez with the carpenter's crew, and as soon as he saw her, he jerked his head toward Mr. Bell. "Mr. Bell, sir, will you permit Mr. Martinez to escort me to the cockpit?" Mercedes said. Mr. Bell looked sharp round at the sound of a feminine voice and stared at Mercedes in her Spanish midshipman's garb. "Aye, miss. See you step back lively, mate," he called to Mr. Martinez. "Because we're all going to have to tally on to turn this here barky, that's why." Mr. Martinez took Mercedes' arm, and they hastened forward. "He is as brave as a lion," Mr. Martinez told Mercedes as they ran along. "Saved us all last night when the foremast went. John Bull is a prodigious seaman, whatever else he may be." They entered the screened-off sick berth and found Dr. Van Arsdale tending the casualties of the gale. Broken bones, contusions, and one serious, fractured skull. "God keep you, girl," Mr. Martinez said. "Stay here until the captain sends for you." He leaned forward as though he would kiss Mercedes' cheek. Mercedes' head came up in a proud, sharp gesture, and Mr. Martinez backed away and took his leave with a resigned look. Their exchange wasn't lost on the doctor, though he attended to the patient under his hands. After Mercedes had assisted him in his round, and they were sitting a moment on the lockers set up for operating, listening to the shouting and furious activity of the ship, Dr. Van Arsdale commented, "Your friend has volunteered, ma'am." "Yes, sir. He would not go to prison." She fell silent, contemplating how she felt about the English doctor referring to Mr. Martinez as her friend, a man her mother never would avow, even while accepting the roof he put over her head and the food for her table. Mr. Martinez was no more than a working man, while the de Aragons claimed relation to the renowned Spanish poet, playwright and wit, Francisco de Quevedo. They heard the powerful voice of Captain Blackwell calling for silence on deck, then a series of orders, and the stamping of hundreds of feet, and the groaning of the ship. Neither Mercedes nor Dr. Van Arsdale knew what was taking place over their heads, but they felt the tension of the seamen and the collective relief when the ship went about, then settled on the new tack. Later in the same watch, the captain's coxswain Narhilla came into the cockpit to visit his mate McMurtry. Narhilla gave the steward his understated account of the emergency on deck. "Captain had both watches tally on, and we wore her right round. Barely clawed the barky off that lee shore, mate. Shaved it right close, we did. Speaking of which, my beauty. In the singular way of seamen, McMurtry, surely among the most ill-favored men in creation, was called either my beauty or Mech beauty. You look precious strange with one part your head shaved. Mind you don't scare the captain's little miss now. Mind your own gob, Narhilla. That's her yonder in them breeches. So you just clap a stopper over it. And then, in a low, confidential tone, McMurtry said, Captain knows as how I'm good with the ladies, see? So he sets me to look after her, like. If washing petticoats along with the captain's shirts pleases you, why, it makes no mind to me. McMurtry scowled at Narhilla's management of the last salvo, and looking about him, he struggled out of the hammock, propelling himself with his one good arm. If you was wishing to return to the cabin, miss, I'll be pleased to take you. Lay down, McMurtry. Your head has been concussed, Dr. Van Arsdale said. You're not fit for duty. I'll take the lady back to the cabin. They have beat the retreat, have they not? When the two men nodded, glum-faced, Dr. Van Arsdale offered Mercedes his arm. Come, ma'am. I'm sure you'll be more comfortable in the cabin. May I have a private word first, doctor? Dr. Van Arsdale nodded, took her arm, and brought her to the dispensary, a little closet where the surgeon's medical stores were kept. I found, doctor, after looking over the contents of my sea chest, the captain was kind enough to allow me it. I did not bring away any vinegar, sir, so I must beg some of you. The doctor's head was necessarily bowed in the small apartment, hiding the expression of his face. After Mercedes made her request, Dr. Van Arsdale showed her a professional, non-committal countenance, and moved away without a word to draw off a pint bottle from the stores at hand. Here you are, ma'am. And please to let me know when you require more. He led Mercedes out through the lower deck to the upper, past where the Spanish prisoners were working the pumps. They called respectful greetings to Mercedes as she walked aft to the captain's cabin. She had given the doctor further evidence of her maturity, for vinegar was used against conception. The gale had abated in the morning watch, allowing in Constance narrow escape from wrecking on a lee shore. On the iron-bound coast of Spain, none had seen until the first gray light came creeping into the sky. The tremendous seas of the night before had pushed in Constance far east and north, until in the morning they found themselves almost upon Cape Finisterre. Blackwell cursed himself for how close to destruction he had allowed his ship to come. He knew the coast of Europe intimately well, and he should have smelled the land. He certainly did now, as they struggled to windward. He was exhausted, but after the effort of wearing ship, with both watches on deck and near 100 men hauling the mainsail, he was another 10 hours about the ship overseeing repairs. Inconstant had lost her foremast and her mizzen and main topmasts, and all of her boats, saving the barge, launch, and gig. In the first dog watch, just before the master, Mr. Hammerly, took the deck, Blackwell passed the word for Mr. Sprague. Repairs are going forward very well. The people have behaved splendidly. Blackwell gazed over the ship's side at the sea. A high swell, nothing more, was left of the shattering storm. And removing his coat and waistcoat, he let them fall where he stood. And I believe we shall complete the jury mass by the setting of the first watch. Then we shape our course for Gibraltar. And I must beg you to stand a watch from this time forward. I'll move up one of the youngsters, but until I have time to consider, you must stand to watch, Mr. Sprague.
Aye, aye, sir, Mr. Sprague said, a disobliging look on his face.
Blackwell flung off his shirt and breeches, stepped up on the taffrail, and jumped into the sea below. In the cabin, the large body flying past the stern windows caught Mercedes' attention. She hastened forward and dropped to her knees behind the lockers. The area was a little stockade from which she peered out at the form in the water. Blackwell had plunged deep and kicked his way back up, breaking the surface with water, darkening his hair. He took a few strokes up and back, then flung himself at the stern ladder and hauled out. She had a fine view of his nakedness as he did. Those powerful thighs gave her pause. Captain De Leone Castillo had been a much smaller man, frail even, and she imagined enduring his feeble thrusts would be as nothing compared to what the act would be with this man. On deck, the sight of Inconstant's captain striding naked to his cabin wasn't cause for notice. The captain frequently plunged into the sea or caused the pump used in washing the decks to be turned on him, and no one was bold enough to remind him there was a lady in his cabin. Blackwell yanked open the cabin door and went straight into his sleeping cabin without glancing right or left, his mind occupied with moving one of the midshipmen up to acting third lieutenant. Then they could make up three watches and give his officers more than 4 hours sleep at a stretch. It was like Mr. Sprague to act as though it were beneath his dignity as the new first lieutenant to stand a watch and oblige Blackwell to order him to it. Yet bitter thoughts didn't linger in Blackwell's mind as he lay down on his cot. He was too gratified to have brought his ship through the terrible gale, and he sunk into unconsciousness with something like happiness in his heart.
Thank you for listening to Captain Blackwell's Prize. This is a work of fiction offered under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives, 3.0 U.S. License. Music is Bach's Prelude from Suite No. 1, performed on Cello Journey, from Mevio's Music Alley, www.musicalley.com. For more information on Captain Blackwell's prize, visit www.veulett.com.